Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Harris, Judge Smith, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Jepal J. Harris presiding.
Please be seated. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'm Judge Jepal Harris. In a moment, we are going to begin calling cases. Before we do call those cases, I do have a couple of housekeeping things to tell you. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes for argument, with the appellant having a 5-minute rebuttal. On the podium, there is a button to your left that allows you to raise and lower that button. So before you do begin your argument, you can adjust that to your comfort. With that, counsel, or excuse me, with that, Madam Clerk, if you want to call the first case.
The first case is A23-1799, Michelle Wilson, respondent, versus Ryan Wilson, appellant.
Counsel, you can begin when you're ready.
Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Laura Schultz, and I represent the appellant, Father Ryan Wilson, in this matter before the court. This appeal stems from a request from Ryan's former wife and mother of the party's two children for a harassment restraining order 6 years post their dissolution. Brief history of the parties. The parties were married in October of 2007. They separated in 2017, 10 years later, and they were divorced that same year. The court has reviewed the addendum. There was extensive litigation post-decree regarding multiple motions, not just on behalf of appellant Ryan Wilson, but also his mother. He is in the military, and post-decree he was deployed frequently. And so there were multiple motions and multiple litigation regarding parenting time for him or via his mother. Included one case that actually also was appealed to the Court of Appeals. Judge Bowman, who presided over the family court matter, issued an order in April of 2023, kind of finally quelling some of these family court motions before the court. Just 1 month later, in May of 2023, Mother Michelle Wilson initiated her request for an HRO, harassment restraining order. Judge Bowen initially denied her request for an HRO when it was initially submitted to the court and set the matter for hearing. The matter then is set for several hearings, just kind of review matters regarding some discovery matters and other things, and then finally is an evidentiary hearing is held regarding her request for an HRO. The court does eventually grant her request for an HRO, finding that there was a basis for such. The court also hears a post-decree, or I'm sorry, a post-evidentiary hearing motion for amended findings brought on behalf of Ryan Wilson. We brought this appeal subsequent and have alleged several errors, first being that the court denied the request to have the case assigned to the family court judge, Judge Bowman, Rule 113.
The one judge, one family issue that seems to be the only thing that supports you is totally discretionary, isn't it?
It is discretionary, but I think that had the court granted the request, that family court judge, because of the extensive litigation that followed, would have been in the best position to make credibility determinations.
But part of the reason I don't see that as realistic is that this is a harassment proceeding. There are some pretty specific timelines that aren't going to be accommodated necessarily if you're bouncing the case back to a different judge or things of that sort.
Well, I would disagree with that, and that in this case, the initial request was denied, right? Those timelines are in place to protect the person if the initial request is granted. It was initially denied, and that's why this case is not actually litigated. The evidentiary hearing is not actually held until 3 months later after it was initially brought.
But doesn't the statute require that it be held sooner than that if there's a request for the hearing granted?
It does, but the court did not hold it within those time frames.
I understand, but you're asking for all these things to take place, and yet this if it's done right, is supposed to be on a pretty strong timeline.
Additionally, besides the Judge Bowman obviously did eventually hear the case. And I think the bigger issues is that the court, we're alleging, abused its discretion in making credibility determinations. And more importantly, as this court is required to review de novo, that no harassment occurred under the statute 609-748, and that those allegations were not proved. I essentially kind of put them into two camps. One, there's the allegations that mother made prior to dissolution, right, some conduct that occurred during the marriage. And then there's these allegations that occurred post-decree, and generally when there was a third party present saying that she was harassed during these parenting time dispute type issues. So going back to the first, during the dissolution, the allegations, and if you look at the testimony in the transcript, she makes these bare allegations that he hit me, threatened me, kicked me during the divorce. That's all she says during her testimony. There is no follow-up testimony. There are no exhibits. There are no specific dates or references. There's no conduct described. There's no location described. There is nothing described about it other than a bare allegation. And the case law is clear that it has to be based on testimony and documents admitted. You can't just make a bare allegation that these things occurred. So I think that with regard to the allegations that contained during the marriage, there's no evidentiary basis for such. With regard to the allegations that occurred post-decree, I don't think they arise to the level of conduct that this court could find legally arise to conduct that is harassment under the statute. Conduct, it has to be repeated incidents of intrusive or wanted acts that have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of an individual. A lot of these disputes that she's alleging, a third party is present. Doesn't obviously arise to the conduct that the third party is concerned or steps in or does anything. And that the fact that somebody is, you know, being inappropriate or raising their voice is not enough to arise to the level of harassment. The Witchell case makes clear, and the facts are similar. In the Witchell case, the court said, although husband's statements might be argumentative or inappropriate, he wrote some comments in a parenting notebook that's being exchanged. And while those comments, they said, might be inappropriate or yelling or argumentative, they're not harassment. And I think the Witchell facts are very similar to the case here in that the conduct that mom is alleging, these disputes about parenting type issues, just aren't arising to the level of harassment. The court did find in this case that the mom's allegations that he was showing up at her house, the court did find that that behavior was not harassment. So with regard to all of mom's allegations, I think as a matter of law, do not arise to conduct that constitute harassment. And I think on that basis, and I am asking on behalf of my client, to ask the court to reverse the district court's grant of a harassment restraining order and vacate the order.
One of your arguments in the brief was we can't look at the conduct that happened pre-dissolution because of the stipulation. Today you've argued that the conduct pre-dissolution is not enough, but looking at that conduct. So can we look at that conduct, or are you still relying on the stipulation saying that excludes all of that?
I think both is true. I think if you look at the conduct, it's not, doesn't arise to proving harassment. But even prior to getting to that discussion or looking at that, I think it is barred by the stipulation in the divorce decree because the parties did in their divorce decree said that the parties have mutually and expressly waived any and all liability, claims, obligations against the other party, whether arising in contract, status, tort, or otherwise, relating to liability, claims, or obligations. And that was done in 2017. Additionally, besides the barred future actions in the decree, I think it also speaks to mom's credibility. I mean, she admits to this stipulation in the divorce decree and then gets on the stand and says, well, there was, he hit me and he did all this stuff during the dissolution. Counsel, and again, with no specifics.
Counsel, was this waiver argument made at the district court?
It is in the amended motion. So Ryan Wilson represented himself pro se at the evidentiary hearing. He does not make it at the evidentiary hearing, but it is in his amended motion. And Rule of Evidence 201, the court should have taken judicial notice of that once he brought it up in his amended motion, and the court denied the amended motion.
So there was a second motion where he did raise the stipulation or the waiver issue to the district court, is what you're arguing here today?
He brought a motion for amended findings, I believe it's in October, after the evidentiary hearing in August.
I don't see that stipulation in our record, though.
The
dissolution agreement with the stipulation that waives these things. Is that in our record? I know it was brought in the motion as an argument, but I don't think the actual stipulation is in the record.
It should be in the addendum.
Well, but the addendum's different, though, right? Like, we might have it. But was it actually admitted to the district court and part of the record that the district court considered?
I don't believe that Mr. Wilson brought it in his motion. In his motion, he quotes it, right? He didn't necessarily attach it, but it is within the court's ability to take judicial notice of a court order within its district.
Okay, so to get to that stipulation, we need to take judicial notice of that and then go down the road.
Correct.
Okay.
With that, I have no further argument unless the court has additional questions.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Deborah Julius, and I represent Michelle Wilson, the respondent in this matter today. May I proceed?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Wilson is here today, and we are opposing, obviously, the brief and arguments of Mr. Wilson. It is our position, number one, and the seminal case in this sort of proceeding is Cush v. Matheson, and that is 683 Northwest 2nd 841. And what it leads to today is, number one, it is within the court's discretion to issue a harassment order or not. The court is in a position to hear the actual testimony of the participants, including the long pauses, as I did just now, stumbling over sentences, things like that. The court is able to see, hear, and question, if it so chooses, the testimony of each participant. And the transcript is clear in this. The court did do that. Very much so, the court did do that. Also, the court is in the position to judge credibility of the testimony of the parties. And the court in this case was extremely clear. This was credible and that was credible. The court made a very specific statement. Mr. Wilson was not credible. And he wasn't. Now, the other legal issue that has been brought before you is that the actions of the of Mr. Wilson were, in fact, domestic abuse during the marriage. Absolutely. And the actions post-decree in 2023, there are five specific actions that Ms. Wilson testified about. And she was very clear on those. He yelled. She left one of the, and all of these took place in 2023 from February forward. He yelled at her in counseling appointments to the point where she got up. She testified to this. It's in the transcript. She got up and she said, "I don't feel safe." That's not lack of specificity at all. He yelled. He interrupted. He was dismissive. And to her, especially to her, because we take our victims as we find them, especially to her, it was extremely threatening. This is a man that bit her nose and kicked her during pregnancy. None of that testimony was found to be incredible at all.
Quick, counsel, maybe you should address then the stipulated agreement that nothing would come of what had occurred.
Sure.
Before that date.
Absolutely. That's the waiver argument. Okay, number one, I do want to note, and the order from Judge Bowman, who Mr. Wilson says should have heard this case in the first place, there he brought this argument to Judge Bowman after the harassment hearing. He brought it up in a November 20th motion in 2023 after the harassment hearing and after his motion before Judge Bowman to include the waiver. He was denied. He then brought a motion that said, find Ms. Wilson in contempt for not, quote, abiding by the waiver. I've included that in the addendum. And the reason I did was because Mr. Wilson has made quite an issue about Judge Bowman not hearing the OFP. Judge Bowman denied to find Ms. Wilson in contempt and found that the waiver as applied to a harassment order is against public policy. And that's why I included it in there. It also, there's a couple of things with this waiver. Number one, you can't have a waiver that's against public policy. And I think it's Itell v. Pettig, I've cited it in the brief, that would find such a waiver against public policy. But number two, okay, was the waiver a waiver of her right to ever bring an OFP? Was it a waiver of her right to ever bring a harassment motion? Does it say that? The waiver doesn't say that. It is referred to in Mr. Wilson's brief as a waiver against a tort. Excuse me, a tort. All right, that would be assault, battery, and civil damages. That would be a tort. But is an HRO a tort? I don't think so. And so was she actually, did she waive a right to seek any protection from Mr. Wilson's prior domestic abuse actions in the sense that if he commits further abuse against her, which he did with harassment, but did she waive that? That's not in there. That's not in the plain meaning of the tort. That's in, or in the waiver. It doesn't say anything about that in the waiver whatsoever. So it is my client's position that the waiver is inapplicable in this matter.
Conceptually, I understand the argument that HRO is not a tort. Do you have any cases that also support that?
I don't.
Okay.
I think you would be making new law if you said that it was. Anyways, so what I have cited in the brief is I went into the actions that Mr. Wilson did. Because, okay, while the court has discretion, there are two standards when it was the evidence sufficient. Number one, an objective standard. Well, would an objective standard include, I do not feel safe in a counselor's office. The counselor, would that be objective? What about, and it also, Cush talks about subjective. Okay, again, we take our victims as we find them. All right, this is a woman who, when she hears her former husband yell at her, given the past actions of him, she's afraid. She's afraid. There are certain tones of voice that from people that we know that trigger certain reactions. Are they reasonable? I don't know. Somebody that hit me, kicked me when I was pregnant and bit my nose, started yelling at me, I know I would feel harassed and afraid. That's reasonable. So the actions of Mr. Wilson absolutely rise to the level of an HRO.
Okay, so there seems to be... Counsel, there seems to be two kind of buckets of, I'll say, harassment here. We have the pre-dissolution physical assault is what I will call it. And then we have the post-dissolution counseling. It seems to me that is relying on the repeated instances of unwanted words, acts, and gestures. The district court found that there is a threat to kill, which would be one act. The second act seems to be this counseling session. Can you address appellant's argument that in light of the Wichel decision, where we talk about just mere unwanted or disrespectful comments do not rise to the level of harassment, can you address that argument for me?
Certainly. Mere disrespectful words do not necessarily rise to, and you notice I'm qualifying it, do not necessarily rise to the level of harassment. However, number one, she said, I don't feel safe. Number two, she testified that she went in the lobby and started crying. Okay, either she's crazy or she's reacting to things in the tone of voice, in the manner of speaking, into, I believe the same session was the one where he burst in not necessarily uninvited, but unannounced. Okay, yes, if I just say to you, sir, in the parking lot, I don't like you. Okay, that's not harassment. But if I, again, I'm gonna go back to the history, but also in the, forget the history for a moment. If I said to you, I don't like you, and you are a terrible person, and don't be around me, and you are a liar, you're lying about our son. If I walked in on a session with you and said it like that more than once, I think that constitutes harassment. So,
counsel, it could also constitute an assault in the fifth degree, could it not?
Oh, yes, it can. Absolutely. That doesn't mean, though, that every victim of a fifth degree assault calls the police. And we know that there's a long history of battered
people. I'm not saying that she should have.
Okay, I thought you were implying that. I'm sorry. Okay, so what we're saying here is, number one, the waiver does not apply. Number two, Judge Bowman, I need to just touch on that a little bit. Judge Bowman never met these people. Judge Bowman was assigned this case after Judge Model retired. Judge Bowman got this case when it was remanded by this court. I'm talking now in district court. When it was remanded by this court, Judge Bowman got it. And it was supposed to be, you all had said, there needs to be more specific findings on the order that Judge Model issued in, I believe it was the fall of 2020, November 2020. Okay, so when that finally came back, she didn't know these people. There's never been any testimony at all. In fact, what happened was the parties agreed. They talk about all these parenting time issues. No, the parties agreed to go to mediation. And there was a stipulated mediated order mediated by retired Judge Tanya Manrique that solved all the parenting time issues. They were all solved. So there was no arguments whatsoever about when he can see the children, when he can't, any of that kind of stuff. It was all taken care of. The 2023, April 2023 order from Judge Bowman took care of long-standing financial issues going way, way back to actually 2027. So the idea that this was all about parenting time issues and retaliatory is just not there. And Judge Bowman really has, she's seen them in motion hearings, and I think there's only been two. I could be wrong, but I think there's only been two. So she doesn't know them, and I don't think there would have been any. I don't think he lost any privilege or anything else by going to Judge Bowman. It was a fresh case. I have nothing further, Your Honors.
Counsel, before you sit down, can you address the question, was the waiver argument raised at the district court such that we can consider that here today?
No. And it was not raised in the hearing. It was not objected to. It wasn't even talked about. It was raised, and I don't have in front of me, but it wasn't his amended motion. So I think it was his second motion before Judge Bowman. And that was just raised in a pleading. That's all. And finally, in the reply memorandum of respondent, I want to note that there was no attempt to shove in extra exhibits that you didn't see. The whole pleading of Michelle Wilson, the whole petition was 45 pages, and it included all those attachments. That's the petition. And in fact, Mr. Wilson acknowledged that he read them and he knew about them. He acknowledged it in a May 30th, 2023 letter that he filed June 2nd, talking about that. He never ever objected to those attachments. The exhibit confusion comes from my lack of technical expertise. It does.
Counsel,
I noticed that
your time has expired, so I'll just give you a brief moment to wrap up your final thought.
I was going to pull out things, and I couldn't, and you have to use Mindy's, and I had things in Mindy's, but I couldn't get the connector to work at the council table. That's all.
Thank you, Counsel.
Just a couple things to address or reply to. The first being that counsel indicated that she wants to limit the waiver just to tort action, but that's not how the stipulation reads. It says all liability claims, obligations of any kind, whether arising in contract status, tort, or otherwise. So I think it's much more broad than counsel is trying to limit the waiver to.
Counsel, though, in a harassment proceeding, we're talking about equitable relief, not liability for damages. Isn't that true?
True, but, and I don't think she's barred from ever bringing an HRO, as counsel says. She can bring an HRO. It's just not regarding conduct that occurred prior to that date during the dissolution. We'd be looking strictly at the conduct after.
She cited some language that suggests that this kind of a waiver would not be consistent with the public policy of the state. And that, to me, makes sense. Would you agree are you taking the position that isn't the public policy?
I don't know if it's for this court to determine what is public policy, but I come back to, again, her testimony in that were mere allegations, and I don't think that there were enough evidence submitted regarding that, regarding any specificity of where it located, when we're talking about. She just made a mere allegation, which brings me to the point that counsel was raising with regard to her petition and her attachments to the petition. Those are not exhibits. No exhibits were offered at this evidentiary hearing. This court cannot review new evidence or look at new evidence. Her petition is a pleading and a mere pleading. Her trying to attach them now does not allow this court to look at them.
Were they attached with the initial pleading?
They were attached to the petition, but the petition is merely a pleading. She offered no exhibits at the evidentiary hearing. The court made it clear they were to upload and exchange the exhibits. And even if she couldn't get technology to work at the hearing, she didn't bring copies of exhibits. She didn't even refer to an exhibit and say, I want to offer X. And the court never accepted into the record any exhibits.
But if you file a verified complaint, for example, you could attach various documents to that, and that becomes part of the record that's before the court.
Again, I don't believe that it was submitted as an exhibit, and the court's order was clear that they needed to submit exhibits and offer them. Lastly, I would just submit that I believe that the HRO was brought as retaliation for litigation in family court because it came just a month later after the court's decision regarding extensive, as counsel said, extensive financial disputed issues going back for quite a period of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. This matter is hereby submitted, and we will issue an order within the statutory timeline. Thank you both.
Thank you, Your Honors.